welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
I'm your king!
Well, I didn't vote for you!
This has been a busy week for genetics and biotech since the White House and 10 Downing Street decided to up the ante against the firm sequencing and patenting human genes. The human genome is a biological map laying out the exact sequence of the estimated 3.5 billion pairs of chemicals that make up the DNA in each human cell. Those chemicals are arranged in specific ways to create the estimated 80,000 to 100,000 human genes, which in turn carry the instructions for all the body's processes. Firms that determine that sequence are allowed to patent the information on the bizarre grounds that the transcribed information is an invention and not a discovery. The nonprofit Human Genome Project, which plans to publish a full genetic map on the internet by 2000, posts new findings on its website daily in order to prevent private firms from patenting those sequences. But the private firms are well ahead of this public consortium. Last week, talks with Celera, the principal private gene sequencing firm, had broken down when folks from the U.S. and British governments refused to accede to Celera's demands to restrict access to its data. Celera, a unit of the PE Corporation, promises to make its version of the human genome freely available when it's finished, probably this summer. Celera plans to patent some genes, but its principal business plan is to operate a database of the human and other genomes, charging fees for use of the programs that search and analyze the genetic data. The strategy of two rivals, InSight and Human Genome Sciences Incorporated, is to focus on the genes themselves, patenting as many as possible. Human Genome Sciences Incorporated said it had been given a patent for the CCR5 receptor gene last week, which codes for a cellular doorway used by most strains of the AIDS virus to get into the immune system cells that it attacks. It is so important for infection that people who lack both copies of this receptor strongly resist HIV infection, and those who have just one copy or faulty copies become infected much more slowly. It hopes to license the information to companies looking for ways to treat or even prevent HIV infection. HGSI, that is Human Genome Sciences Incorporated, is collaborating with Precy Pharmaceuticals, based in Cambridge, Mass., to develop therapies for AIDS using the CCR5 receptor gene. In response to the breakdown of talks with Celera and the growing outrage of the medical and scientific communities about the capitalist land grab in the genome, threatening such basic medical breakthroughs as, for instance, AIDS therapy, President Clinton and Prime Minister Tony Blair issued a joint statement saying that the sequence information about the human genome should be made freely available to all researchers. "We must ensure the profits of human genome research are measured not in dollars, but in the betterment of human life," the president said. The statement led to a sharp sell-off in the stocks of biotechnology companies, including Celera, InSight, and HGSI. The White House rushed to deny that it had intended to challenge the patentability of genes or the intellectual property laws protecting gene patents. "The whole point of this is to make new raw data available so private companies can innovate, create new medicine and treatment, and make a profit," said White House spokesman Jake Stewart. "It's meant to foster competition," which is a perfect illustration of the way that centrist social democrats like Clinton and Blair are terminally confused about which side they're on. Not everything has to be in the marketplace. Some things can be public goods, public property. You could even take back property rights that were improperly ceded to those firms in the first place. And yes, that is anti-free market in some ways, although the centrists are correct that it will prevent monopolization, and in that respect, it will protect competition for all that. Craig Venter, the renegade government scientist behind Celera, reiterated his position that Celera would make available the sequence of the human genome when it is finished, and said that the onus was on its rivals InSight and Human Genome Sciences to make their data public. "I agree with the president and Tony Blair that InSight and HGSI should publish their data," he said. The Human Genome Project first started its efforts in 1995, and Craig Venter, now head of Celera, was one of its initiators. But a few years later, Venter jumped to the private sector, helping to found Celera and saying that he had a quicker way to map the genes called shotgun sequencing. He said in January that his company had sequenced 90% of the human genes and plan to finish the job later this year, using some of the Human Genome Project's published information. According to figures released by Human Genome Sciences, Insight leads in the human gene patent race with 353 United States patents issued, followed by Human Genome Sciences with 114, SmithKline Beecham with 60, United States government with 49, University of California with 46, and Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston with 45. So, good news that factional infighting in biotechnology field has actually spurred some pro-social, anti-capitalist rhetoric from the centrist social democrats of the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Britain. The Patent and Trademark Office is also implementing two changes to patent regulations in response to the controversy. The first requires that patent applicants demonstrate a specific, substantial, and credible, those are all the specific words incorporated in the new regulations, specific, substantial, and credible utility for their discoveries. As of now, only a credible utility is required. The second rule restricts how much of the stretch of code the applicants can claim on either side of the immediate piece of genetic material that they're seeking to patent. Unfortunately, a ban on gene patenting altogether will still take an unlikely Supreme Court decision and/or legislation. So what are we to do in the meantime? Well, Donna McLean, a poet and casino waitress from Bristol in Western England, has one answer. Angered at the patenting of gene sequences by businesses, she is attempting to patent herself. It has taken 30 years of hard labor for me to discover and invent myself, and now I wish to protect my invention from unauthorized exploitation, genetic or otherwise, McLean told The Guardian. The British Patent Office did not signal that it was likely to grant her patent, and noted that it is not really worth patenting something unless you make a lot of money from it.
I'm getting better!
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
The controversy over gene patenting comes on the heels of the worst publicity yet for gene therapy in the history of this burgeoning field. Since 18-year-old Jesse Gelsinger died last fall from the side effects of gene therapy, the National Institutes of Health has been swamped with reports of side effects from the other gene therapy experiments around the country. In Gelsinger's case, as in many other trials, new genes were carried into the body using a genetically modified adenovirus, a cold virus. The NIH has received reports of over 700 serious adverse events suffered by participants in gene therapy studies, all but 39 reported to the agency since the investigation was begun into the Gelsinger death, and University of Pennsylvania researchers failed to report previous deaths and complications associated with their experiments. An adverse event can range from an unexpected fever in a patient being treated with gene therapy to a death. Some of the side effects are similar to those that Gelsinger suffered before his death. Also among the reports are a handful of deaths. The researchers involved largely blame deaths on the patient's underlying diseases, not the experimental gene therapy, but some are unexplained. The sudden influx suggests that researchers are frequently violating federal law that requires immediate reporting of serious problems during experimental gene therapy to the NIH committee that oversees this budding new science. The Food and Drug Administration has shut down all gene therapy experiments at the University of Pennsylvania, where Gelsinger was treated and died, because of numerous violations of federal research rules. Congress has opened its own investigation, but don't expect a Republican Congress to put its finger on the real problems anytime soon, namely the powerlessness and underfunding of a regulatory apparatus at the FDA and NIH, and the unseemly influence of capitalist profit-making on the research process. Of particular concern are doctors who enroll and treat patients in clinical studies that are paid for by the companies they own, a practice that the Food and Drug Administration says is growing in gene therapy. For instance, Dr. Ronald Crystal, a gene therapy researcher at Cornell University's Weill Medical College, has treated patients in studies paid for by the company he founded, Genvec. So has Dr. Jeffrey Eisner, a scientist at St. Elizabeth's Medical Center in Boston. Dr. Eisner, along with the medical center and two other partners, founded a company called Vascular Genetics, of which he owns 20%. Both have drawn the attention of members of the Recombinant DNA Advisory Committee, the National Institutes of Health panel that oversees gene therapy research. Dr. Crystal was criticized for asking the panel not to disclose that a heart disease patient had died of an underlying illness during a gene therapy experiment. And before the panel learned that most gene therapy researchers were failing to comply with its guidelines to report patient side effects, Dr. Eisner was singled out for failing to do so. An ethicist and member of the oversight board, Ruth Macklin, said she would like to require doctors who own stock or have other financial interests in companies to disclose those interests on the consent forms distributed to patients. But others, like Dr. David Blumenthal, who directs the Institute for Health Policy at Massachusetts General Hospital, would ban the practice outright. I'm not comfortable with scientists owning substantial equity in small firms that are sponsoring their clinical research, Dr. Blumenthal said. I think it creates a conflict of interest. And the conflict is particularly difficult to justify in cases where patients' welfare may be affected.
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system!
The case in point is Jesse Gelsinger, whose death brought the current wave of scrutiny. The principal investigator of the study was Dr. James Wilson, director of the university's Institute for Human Gene Therapy. He's also the founder of a biotechnology company, Genovo, in which both he and the university hold stock. Genovo contributes one-fifth of the $25 million annual budget at the Gene Therapy Institute, and in return has exclusive rights to develop Dr. Wilson's discoveries into commercial products. So while the company did not pay for the study that cost Mr. Gelsinger his life, it was financed by the National Institutes of Health. Genovo does have an indirect interest in all of Dr. Wilson's work. Indeed, Dr. Wilson was required to disclose his connection to Genovo on the informed consent document that explained the study's benefits and risks to patients, which is the preferred solution suggested by Ruth Macklin. The informed consent document is obviously an inadequate way to regulate this conflict of interest. In a 1996 analysis of 789 articles in medical journals, Dr. Sheldon Krimsky, a professor of urban and environmental policy at Tufts University, found that 34% of the authors had financial interest, most frequently a patent pending, in the subject matter being studied. In a later study, Dr. Krimsky interviewed the authors of articles in medical journals about calcium channel blockers, commonly prescribed for high blood pressure and chest pain from angina. Among those who supported the use of the drugs, 96% had a relationship with the pharmaceutical industry, compared with 60% who were neutral toward the drugs and 37% who were critical of them. So in other words, there was a very strong relationship between scientists' attitudes towards the drugs and their financial interest in them. Congress has helped fuel the trend of scientists starting their own businesses. In 1980, it passed the Bayh-Dole Act, Bayh being Senator Bayh and Dole being Senator Dole, a law designed to speed up the commercialization of academic discoveries. It encouraged universities to patent inventions and then assign the rights to those patents to private companies that could develop them into products. Instead of relying on existing companies, scientists like Dr. Hammond began raising venture capital and starting businesses on their own. Universities like the Bayh-Dole Act because it generates income from licensing fees and royalties, and because it gives their best scientists incentive to stay in academia. Scientists like it because it helps them carry discoveries from the laboratory to the bedside, and because they no longer have to leave the prestige of academia to earn the money available in industry. For some, it has been quite lucrative. Dr. William Hazeltine, the chief executive of Human Genome Sciences in Rockville, Maryland, founded 7 biotech companies while a professor at Harvard University. I don't even know how many millions I've made, he said. But he insisted the motivation was not primarily money. The motivation was the joy of conceiving ideas and reducing them to practical reality to make a difference in people's lives, he said. In related news, the NIH has shut down projects using human volunteers in federal research at Alabama's largest medical center, citing potential safety concerns among the test subjects. About 25% of University of Alabama's 2,200 research projects could be temporarily affected. Last year, a similar moratorium at Duke University's medical center lasted only 4 days. The NIH office found flaws in the University of Alabama's internal oversight of its research projects involving human subjects, including failure to adequately review patient risks and insufficient tracking of research participants for follow-up information.
I'm getting better!
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
The unprecedented federal attention to genetic therapy and gene patents comes on the heels of Clinton signing an executive order prohibiting every federal department and agency from using genetic information in any hiring or promotion action. The president has also endorsed the Genetic Non-Discrimination in Health Insurance and Employment Act of 1999, introduced by Senator Daschle and Congresswoman Slaughter, which would extend these protections to the private sector and to individuals purchasing health insurance. Quoting from the White House press release on genetic discrimination, quote, "Genetic discrimination is real. In a 1996 study published in Science, 15% of individuals at risk of developing a genetic condition said that they had been asked questions about genetic diseases on job applications. 13% of the respondents reported that they or another family member had been denied a job or fired from a job because of a genetic condition in the family. Fear of discrimination is widespread. Confidentiality of genetic test results is a major concern for the public. A 1997 study of the National Center for Genome Resources found that 63% of people would not take genetic tests if employers could access the results. And almost 50% of people believe that most employers will ask employees to take genetic tests in the future. The president's executive order will prohibit federal employers from requiring or requesting genetic tests as a condition of being hired or receiving benefits. Employers would not be able to request or require employees to undergo genetic tests in order to evaluate an employee's ability to perform his or her job. It will also prohibit federal employers from using protected genetic information to classify employees in a manner that deprives them of advancement opportunities. Employers would not be able to deny employees promotions or overseas posts because of a genetic predisposition for certain diseases. And finally, it provides for strong privacy protections to any genetic information used for medical treatment and research. Under the order, obtaining or disclosing genetic information about employees or potential employees is prohibited, except when it is necessary to provide medical treatment to employees, ensure workplace health and safety, or provide occupational and health researchers access to data. In every case where genetic information about employees is obtained, it will be subject to all federal and state privacy regulations. This is a quote from the White House press release. If you think Americans are concerned about genetic privacy, you should talk to Icelanders. A private firm is collecting DNA samples from all of Iceland's 270,000 citizens and linking the genetic profiles with their health records and family trees. The database that it plans to build would offer an unprecedented chance to discover genetic links to disease. Although people's genetic profiles, health histories, and family trees will be linked, their identities will be encrypted by clinics and hospitals before the information reaches the company, said Dr. Kerry Stefansson, founder and CEO of Decode Genetics, the Reykjavik company which will develop the database. Iceland is an ideal site for using DNA to track genetic links to disease. Relatively few outsiders have moved in over the 1,000 years since the Vikings settled the island, and the nation has extensive health records and family trees, some dating back 500 years. Iceland passed a law last December allowing Decode Genetics to move ahead with its DNA database project. Once the database is complete, the company plans to use computer programs to search for patterns. Decode Genetics has rights to market the database for 12 years. It plans to sell information to pharmaceutical companies and researchers. Icelanders will be allowed to take themselves out of the database. Stefansson said that he expects it to take 3 years to complete the database programming, much less time to get usable information. I think we'll begin to market it pretty soon, he said. Even without the database, Iceland's homogeneity is a major asset for Decode. It was a major reason that the Roche Healthcare Group signed a contract that could be worth more than $200 million to look for genes which cause 12 common diseases. The contract was signed in February 1998, 13 months later, the two companies announced that they were closing in on a site of a gene that causes osteoarthritis. As part of the contract, the Roche Group will give Iceland any drugs that it develops as a result of the research.
A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again!
Another piece of gene news in the last week has been the announcement by British biopharmaceutical company PPL Therapeutics that it created the world's first clone pigs. This brings much closer the prospect of widespread use of genetically modified pigs as sources of human DNA-based organ transplantation. The pigs will be cloned from genetically modified cells in which a gene involved in human rejection will be inactivated or knocked out. Otherwise, humans would reject the organ. An example of the uses of xenotransplantation came this week in a study published in the journal Neurology. 10 patients at Boston University Medical Center with advanced Parkinson's disease had pig embryonic cells surgically implanted in their brains and were tested before and a year later. All improved, several dramatically. There were no side effects, and the improvements were similar to those observed in studies that had transplanted human embryonic neural cells. Because the donors were pigs, however, the risk of rejection was much greater than for human donors, and the recipients had to either take immunosuppressive drugs or use pig neurons that were pre-treated to trick the human immune system into ignoring them. And of course, this would be the goal of the genetically modified pigs, is to create the genetic characteristics of that immune system trick. Xenotransplantation is under fire from animal rights advocates, as well as those concerned about the potential health risks of animal diseases spreading to humans through transplantation. Of particular concern are retroviruses, such as the simian foamy virus, which can incorporate themselves into a patient's DNA. Xenotransplant researchers have turned to pigs because they harbor fewer viruses of concern and can be genetically modified to lower the risk of organ rejection. Donor pigs are raised under controlled quarantined conditions and screened extensively to minimize the risk of transmitting viral or bacterial infections to the patient. Viral agents known to affect humans are screened out. Other viral agents may potentially be transmitted to patients but have never been shown to infect humans. All study patients have tested negative for these infections. All study patients have tested negative for these infections, but some pigs nevertheless do have a retrovirus called the porcine endogenous retrovirus, or PERV. Scientists continue to debate whether PERV is a threat to humans. One problem is that, like HIV, these retroviruses might not cause noticeable disease for many years after infection. Scientists on both sides of the Atlantic and the prestigious journal Nature have called in 1998 for a moratorium on xenotransplantation after British scientists found that two types of pig viruses were capable of infecting human cells. They said the risks of creating new human diseases or pandemics were too great and cited the HIV virus, which probably began by a cross-species transfer, as an example. There has also been concern about the even more elusive prion, which is thought to be the cause of the spongiform encephalopathies such as the mad cow disease. Another avenue may provide even better tissues with less chance of rejection, and that is cloning organs and tissues directly from those who need them. Tissue cloned from the recipient would not be rejected, and patients would not need to take anti-rejection immune-suppressing drugs, nor would the tissue need to be genetically modified to suppress immune system response. For instance, Japanese researchers have grown frog eyes and ears in a lab using the animal's own embryo cells, technology that could eventually help doctors replace lost or damaged human sensory organs using cells from the patient's bodies. The team cultivated thousands of embryo cells in different solutions of retinoic acid solution to produce either eyes or ears. Groups have been successful using cloning or stem cells to grow liver, blood vessels, peripheral nerves, and spinal neurons, cartilage, and skin. In all, university and private research labs are looking at various stages of growing 23 different forms of live tissue. Livers are the organ in most critical shortage around the country because of hepatitis and alcohol-related injuries. But recent research may point to the ability to help sick livers regenerate and avoid transplantation altogether. One team made liver cells live longer by renewing the telomerase caps that protect the genetic material in cells. Telomerase has been called the timepiece of human aging, and there has been success in protecting cells against aging by infusing them with additional telomerase. Each time a cell divides, the telomeres at the end become a little more frayed. Eventually, they become so damaged that the cell dies, forming scar tissue, or mutates into a cancer cell. When liver cells have been forced to regenerate too many times, they die to form scar tissue, which is known as cirrhosis, or mutate into liver cancer. Dr. Ron DePinho of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and the Harvard Medical School in Boston and colleagues have now shown that telomere damage may be the cause of cirrhosis of the liver, and that it can be successfully prevented by genetically engineering liver cells that produce more telomerase. The team experimented with mice damaging their livers with chemicals and seeing how long it took the liver cells to stop regenerating and for cirrhosis to begin. Then they genetically engineered mice to make their liver cells produce extra telomerase. The mice did not develop cirrhosis when chemicals were used to damage their livers, they reported in the journal Science. A second team at Harvard and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, along with a group at Okayama Medical School in Japan, have made human liver cancer cells immortal, not with telomerase, but with a gene introduced via a virus. And then they used a second gene-tailored virus to reverse this process after they had grown a lot of telomerase-producing cells to prevent these cells from turning cancerous. They transplanted these into rats who had 90% of their livers removed, and the cells continued to work to keep the rats alive. And recent reports out of China demonstrate some of the alternative sources of organs available to fascist dictatorships. Doctors at Sun Yat-sen Hospital in the southern city of Guangzhou told the South China Sunday Morning Post in Chinese-occupied Hong Kong the most transplant organs come from prisoners. Quote, prisoners are good because they're young, said one doctor, and consent isn't an issue since Chinese law does not require it for convicted criminals. Another doctor said January was also an excellent time for transplants because of the mainland's practice of executing prisoners before big festivals. Our experience tells us, quote, that there are many organs before the Lunar New Year and other big days, he said. Quote, if you miss this chance, you may have to wait until May Day. A liver transplant costs only about $25,000 at Sun Yat-sen Hospital as opposed to more than $100,000 in the West. They accept patients who would be ranked low in priority for Western livers. And reports suggest that you can have a prisoner executed to accommodate your visit to China, so call ahead.
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!
But Beijing responds that all organ donations were voluntary and strictly supervised, and a Ministry of Health directive bars the buying and selling of human tissue. So, heck, let's make them permanent trading partners and ignore their slave labor, trading prisoners' organs, massive arrests of unpopular religious groups, and military threats against democratic neighbors. But that's another show. Today's show quoted extensively, although non-linearly, from articles published by the New York Times, Reuters, and AP, as well as press releases from the White House and the American Academy of Neurology. This show included several brief interventions by Monty Python, and the musical bed was from the album Automaton Jihad, Points of Order, by Subharmonic Production. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.